What's happening, everybody? Welcome to episode 5 of the Two Dudes Reviews podcast. I'm Mike, he's Dave.
What's up, everybody?
To get the formalities out of the way, you can visit us at twodudesreviews.com. That's the number 2dudesreviews.com. We're also on Twitter at twodudes140review. That's the number 2 and the number 140. You can also visit, check us out on Facebook and like us there and such and get in touch with us. That's the link for Facebook's on our website. Today on the podcast, we look at two of our recent reviews. We're going to look at Man of Steel and also the new release of a video game of The Last of Us. And we'll also take a look at a couple of bits of industry news and upcoming movie releases and video games. So let's get started first on the reviews. We'll talk about Man of Steel. I saw that over the weekend. On an IMAX format, they did play it on IMAX only, so I did get to check that out. I wasn't, you know, if you read the review already, I wasn't too impressed with the film. I felt it was kind of, you know, it didn't live up to the standard of the recent, you know, superhero movies of late with Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, the Avenger movie, and even Batman, which was surprising. And one of the things I wrote on Twitter is that this has probably been the one movie I've been more disappointed about in a long time, because I was actually really excited about it going into the film, because I heard a lot of good things and I expected a lot from Christopher Nolan, who was the producer of the film and also wrote the film, who, if you're not familiar with, also did the Dark Knight trilogy, Inception, Memento, a lot of great films. So I was really excited for the film. I know the reviews had kind of dropped prior to the release on Friday, but I was excited for it, and I came back really, really disappointed. You know, it didn't live up to a Chris Nolan standard that he has kind of set for his films, and story-wise. And I was also kind of excited because of Zack Snyder directing it. He was the director for 300. I never saw The Watchmen, which he also directed, but I was excited.
Very good movie.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, and I was excited for the film, but I just came out really disappointed. I felt like they really concentrated so much on the action sequences and, you know, and trying to destroy a city and all of that stuff. So it was disappointed. I'm not a comic book guy, so I don't know much of the background of a lot of these superheroes. I know Superman just from pop culture, and I've seen the older movies with, you know, when I was a kid and I saw the Christopher Reeve movies. I never saw that. What was that recent one? Superman Returns?
Yeah, the one with that, I think it was Brandon Routh that did that one, and that one just got trounced in the ratings. That was like when the bad Hulk movies came out, and then that one came, that Superman movie came out, and they just had this bad string of superhero movies coming out. I hadn't seen that Superman one either. That one looked like a disappointment from the start, but this one looked like it was supposed to be good.
Yeah, and I think some people really liked it. I think some people that actually know Superman and follow the history of Superman, I think, came back liking it. But to me, it just wasn't compelling as The Dark Knight or any of the Batman movies that Christopher Nolan did. And I don't know, and I mentioned this to you, and I think we kind of talked about it a little bit, that I don't know if Superman has as a compelling a story as Batman. You know, with the whole Bruce Wayne, you know, he's almost kind of like, even though he's this powerful, rich guy, he almost comes off as like this everyday type of guy that just wants to be a hero and inspire people. And Superman's different. You know, he comes from another area, and it's like there's a conflict of, you know, how are people on Earth going to, you know, react to me and what I can do and my abilities and things like that. So I don't know if it's as compelling a story as Batman. What do you think?
Yeah, Batman's got more of he's got more of an everyman appeal to him, because you've got more of the, I guess not technically everyman, because it's considering he's probably more rich than anyone we could probably think up on Earth. You know, releasing Saudi princes from emails, you can't get that much money. But yeah, he's got more of an appeal to him because he's got at least to me, because he's got no real superpowers. So, I mean, there's an argument, ongoing argument. I wouldn't even really consider him a superhero. I would consider him a hero, maybe not a superhero, in the line of superheroes. But and then you've got Superman as the whole kind of he's the only superhero that his alter ego is not the superhero. It's the real life person. You know, he started out as a superhero. He didn't become a superhero, and right. I'm going to steal that from Kill Bill 2 if I have to give someone credit for that. It's the truth though that he kind of started as a superhero, and he's out to save the world. Right. And whereas Batman has something driving him from his past, and he's just human, just out there making it work, and it's. I get that. He's got more of a compelling story, and they would have had to do more with Superman to make it a better, make it a more comparable movie to the Dark Knight movies.
Yeah, and that's the thing about, and maybe that's, you know, I went in with the wrong expectation, expecting something like that, and because I don't know, to me, I felt like the Dark Knight films, you know, that Christopher Nolan did, were more, you know. Character based. They weren't really focused. Yes, there was action and stuff, but there was more character building and character development in those stories and in those movies. I just didn't. There wasn't that to me in this film, and maybe that's the reason why, is because of the background and such, and that, you know, Superman's already a superhero and Batman's not. He had to develop himself that way. So maybe that's the reason why. You know, I just felt like they really concentrated on the action part of it, and, you know, and maybe that's a way to get generic moviegoers, you know, the casual moviegoer that's not into the Superman story to go to the film, because those types of people are more into, you know, the summer blockbuster and you know, and seeing all of that, you know, devastation and action going on in a film. And it's just, I don't know. I guess I just expected more, because there was just a lot of very generic lines in the film that, you know, there was these one lines that, you know, these single line, you know, sequences where it's just like, really, you have to write that into a film. You know, you couldn't write something a little bit more greater, more importance for a character, other than, you know, it's like there's one scene with Amy Adams, and, you know, they're on a, you know, I'm not going to give it away, but they're on something, and she has to put a piece of something to get something started. And it's like, you know, she goes through this thing, and it's clearly visible that it's not going in, because there's something, there's a force that's stopping it. And she has this line that just says, like, you know, I can't get it in. It's stuck. You know what I mean? It's just like.
That's what she said.
Right. And, you know, it's just like, it to me, it almost like, really, that's like almost a Twilight script that we're going to. It's like, you know, put on your seatbelt and stuff like that. It's like, you know, it's just generic stuff
just
like that.
Spoon feeding.
Right, exactly. And it's just like, I expect, you know, even though there's, you know, every movie's going to have generic lines like that, but it was a lot of that. There was just generic stuff, like Superman saying to her, like, hold on. It's just like, you know, I don't know. It was very disappointing. And, you know, towards the end, they kind of get towards more of the more Clark Kent that we know of towards the end of the film, that kind of gets developed and such. It just, I would have liked to have seen more character development of him and more, you know, because I really see a lot of potential in Harry and in Henry Cavill. I think he's going to be a great actor given the right material and the right role. And I'm sure they're going to come out with another Superman movie, because I'm sure they want to do the Lex Luthor part of it. Which there's a lot of kind of hints toward that in the film, because, you know, there's a ton of product placement in this film. And I think I read somewhere that maybe that was like, it was, this film had the most money ever earned from product placement. So it's very abundant. You see it everywhere, and it's very blatant. But the other thing that was also very blatant was a lot of mention of LexCorp. You see a lot of, you see that on a building, you see that on a tanker truck. You see a lot of that around in the film. So I'm sure that they're making a second one that's going to have Lex Luthor as the villain. Which I know some people were disappointed that it wasn't in this one. It was General Zod, but I think that kind of goes with, from what I've learned, that kind of goes with the, you know, the introduction of Superman and how that plays out. But I don't know. I was just disappointed by the film. I expected more from Chris Nolan. I expected more from Zack Snyder and such. So my review that I put on the website, and you know, even though my review kind of trashes the film, people should still go see it when they have a chance, either in the theater or on, you know, when it comes out on Blu-ray or DVD. It's still a decent film. It's just not what I expected. So my review was, it's completely forgettable and tedious. Snyder directs a very generic superhero movie that cares more about its grandiose action sequences rather than developing a compelling story. So that's my review of Man of Steel. Like I said, you know, even though I was disappointed, I'm sure other people will certainly like the film, especially if you're into the summer blockbuster type film that it is. But up next we have The Last of Us. It's the PS3 exclusive game that came out last Friday. Dave has been playing it a lot. I've been watching some Let's Plays on YouTube and such. So we'll get into The Last of Us. So how's the game going so far for you, Dave?
The game is absolutely amazing. The game's been getting so many perfect reviews, and I've been waiting so long to get my hands on this game. And when I finally did, when the game loaded up, everything was just so perfect, and like everything was just like crystal clear. And I actually thought I was the cinematics had started, and then it popped up and said press start, and I felt like an idiot because I was like, that's just the press start screen. All right. But then the graphics are just so amazing in this game. The combat and the gameplay is so great. It feels smoother than any game I've ever played, but it didn't live up to the hype for me. There were a lot of things that I think got left out of reviews that some people might find nitpicky, but they're really important that I felt. And I guess they can go both ways. I mean, certain things, like there's no one telling you what to do or where to go. Like we were talking about last week with, a week or two ago, when we were talking about Thief, when they were announcing this game and about how it's got no HUD, right. no real mission description, no beakers or anything like that to tell you where to go. The Last of Us is exactly like that. It will throw you into a new area when you walk through a building or you walk outside of a building, and it'll show you a building in the distance, and it'll tell you have to go here. And then when it brings you back into character, you've got no sense of direction. It's a and it's not an open world game that leaves you to your own devices. It's very linear, but you don't know where you're supposed to go. And that's a real problem for me. Right. It loses some points for me, but it doesn't lose a lot of points because there's so many things that's just so impressive with it that it's such a just impressive feat in a current generation system. It's matching a lot of the gameplay stuff that we've seen in next gen games that they've been releasing already. So it's definitely quite amazing.
Right. And that's what I noticed from the Let's Plays that I watch. And I got to give a shout out to the guy I've been watching this channel. And that's it's kind of an odd name, but his name is Vintage Beef. And I've been watching I've watched about a handful of his Let's Plays so far. I don't know how far he is into the game. It only seems like about an hour or two into the game. And that's the one thing I noticed. That, I mean, the game is beautiful graphically and technically. I think it's pushing the actual limit of what we can do with the current console at this point. I think it's graphically I saw an interview with them that they said that they actually pushed it as far as they could and actually had to come back a little bit because they weren't, it was getting over the limit that they could actually go with on the PS3. So I think from that standpoint, it's phenomenal. But I noticed the same thing from the Let's Plays, and you can even hear his frustration when he was playing it, that it's like, where do I go now? It's like you have this other person that you have to follow, or that's with you. And sometimes that person will just take off to a certain area and, the person's saying in the background, hurry up, let's go. But you're still trying to be somewhat of a scavenger and find, parts of, bullets or health or, parts for to build better weapons and such. And without using whatever that, his magical hearing that, detective mode, Batman detective mode, it's like without using that, you don't know where this person went unless you're like, you're searching all over because they could be 2-3 rooms over. So that's the one thing that I kind of didn't understand from that point, that I know that it seemed like they're trying to throw you into a realistic scenario where you don't have your bearings and such and where you're going to be going. But, at least to me, I would think that if you're looking in a certain direction, there should be like a little marker over the person of where you're supposed to go, like at least an objective marker at some way. I mean, no one wants a floating objective marker. So like when you're turning, you're completely 180 from the person that, it's floating above you and all that stuff. You don't want that. But at least if you're in that direction, it should show up that, this is where this person's waiting for me to help them open a door or go through something or something, you would think. And that's kind of like what you're saying. It's the only complaint that I've seen so far of the game that I can really think of. But, you would think they'd want something, because I don't – is like if you hit a start button, a pause button, is there any type of map that pops up?
No, I haven't there's no real map that you have. What the only thing that you get a sense of direction on is if you are completely lost in a given room or a given area, that if you're really, really lost and you're taking too long to figure it out, you'll get a pop-up that'll say press L3 to get a hint. And it's almost a cheat. It's telling you, it points the camera right at what you're supposed to actually be doing. Or it even pops up with a statement that says you have to do this. There was a point in the game where I had to do something, and I was standing there trying to make something work, and it just wouldn't work. And there was nothing telling me that I had to go and turn on a generator because there was no power, because I didn't know there was supposed to be power to the thing that I was supposed to be working with. Like there's no, until that popped up and told me that I needed a hint, there was nothing directing me to a kind of like a sub objective before the objective I had to get to. Like they really kind of needed to flesh that out a little better, at least with a, mm-hmm. with some direction in the area of where you're supposed to be going or what your mission objectives in each area were.
Right. And that's the one thing that also I noticed is that those little circles that come up where it does indicate something is there for you to do. It seems like you have to be in a perfect line of sight for that to even pop up. Otherwise, if you're not in a perfect line of sight, you're never going to see something like a collectible or, I think the items, don't the items kind of like glow a little bit? They kind of flash a little bit, like when you see like a one of those health things or something like that. But I think otherwise, it's just you have to be in a perfect line of sight to see that little dot to do something.
Yeah, the only time that you see an item that you have to pick up is if you are pretty much on top of it or you see it flashing. And so you have to be in its line of sight, or you have to be pretty much on top of it, and the pop-up comes up for you to pick it up. And I get that to an extent, that the game doesn't want to tell the player where an item is.
Right.
The game wants to put you in the role, so they want you to see the item when Joel sees the item.
Right.
So if Joel doesn't see the item, you don't know it's there. There's nothing alerting you to an item there. And I get that part, but so that's where they kind of make the scavenging a little tough. But I think that's kind of the line of thinking they took with the mission objectives too, and that makes it a little more difficult than just finding items.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that kind of the item studs in how they've done it. It almost feels like it's more suited for an open world game rather than, know, which I know that it's a very linear game from what you've said and what I've seen. It doesn't really give you much option because I don't think you're ever going back to an area that you've been in. So I think you get the one time and one time only chance to really search out for things in that area. So it's like it almost kind of they've developed it as open world, but not giving you, you know, this open world field without giving you the open world option. You know, and that's kind of a strange way to go. But like you said, it's probably just nitpicking a little bit and kind of finding flaws that, you know, maybe, you know, out of a game that's what got 52 or 56 perfect scores.
Yeah. It's one frustrating needle in a haystack of just amazing, impressive achievements that they've accomplished with this game. So it's not anything to hold the game back from being damn near perfect, but right. But it's enough to kind of at least bring you out of the immersion into the game and at least get you a little frustrated about things.
Right. And that's probably all it is. And it's in the reviews I read, I never saw anyone mention anything like that. So, you know, maybe other people don't find it as frustrating, or, you know, they just went with the flow of the game and such. But, you know, it's interesting, but it's an interesting way to go about developing a game to not have any type of objective mark. I don't think we've seen that really from any game that's not open world, because even open world games give you like a little pop-up of an objective where you can open up a map to see where exactly you need to go, you know, to get to what you need to do. So it's kind of an interesting way that they've done it. But otherwise, it's, you know, from what I've seen, and I know from what you've played, it looks phenomenal. It plays phenomenal, because one of the things you mentioned I saw while watching the Let's Play is that, you know, you actually seem to like the combat almost feels like it's combat. Like, yeah. You were saying, when you get hit by a bullet from a gun, you're actually being knocked backwards. You're not just standing there, you know, taking a bullet like you have some sort of protection on. You know, you're actually getting knocked backwards, and it seems like you're able to feel a combat when you're going at someone when it's melee combat.
Yeah, it's that part is absolutely amazing, and that's one of the good frustrating things when you're trying to line up a shot and the guy you're shooting at lines up his shot just a second before you do, and instead of him shooting you and you just take the damage and you fire back at him and you pull off a headshot, if you're a split second too late, his bullet's going to put you on your ass. Yeah. And it completely throws you off. You got to take cover. If you're low enough on health, you have to. And the good thing about like healing yourself is it's not an instant heal. You have to find a place to actually duck and cover, break out your med pack, and he actually wraps like his arm or something like that, and it takes a certain amount of seconds, which can be upgraded with some of the items that you collect throughout the game. But it takes time for him to actually sit there and wrap up his arm or like heal himself, which that's really cool. And right. it gives it a very realistic feel. So it's that I would actually consider a good frustration, because it's like, it makes you want to be a better shot. It makes you want to take that shot quicker and get better at the game. So actually, I really like that part a lot.
And what about, you know, what about your thought on everybody and the reviews that we've read and everybody talking about it, that everything, it seemed like items were tough to come by as far as ammunition and health and, you know, food and all this stuff, they were tough to come by. But, you know, in the Let's Play that I've been watching, it seems like it has been, but I think you have kind of a different experience.
I screwed up a little bit. I didn't realize that, because when I play a game with it's supposed to have a great story, I start a game on easy first, because I want to play through the first time I play through the game. I want to get the story. I want to be enthralled in that. I don't want to be sidetracked by, oh, I get into an area that I can't beat, or, you know, get rushed by too many guys that piss me off too much. I'll go back and play the game multiple times on different levels. But first time I play through on easy, and easy on The Last of Us is so incredibly easy with ammo and items. Like, when I found one of the weapons you get through the game is a shotgun, when I found the shotgun, I have not run out of ammo in the shotgun yet. And I have literally gone through areas of this game, not hiding, not distracting enemies, just running and gunning, headshotting with the shotgun, and guys are dropping ammo from the gun that I need on easy. And I think easy might be kind of a super easy mode. So if you haven't played the game yet and you're looking for the whole scavenging kind of a difficult feel to the game, don't play it on easy first. The trophies do stack, so when you beat the game on a harder level first, it will give you the easy trophy. I didn't find that out until after as well. So definitely, unless you are really, really going for an easy experience, play it. Start the game on a harder level first.
Okay. Yeah, because if you're on a harder level, the items are less frequent.
Yeah, from what I understand, the items are going to be less frequent. The guys aren't going to drop as much ammo. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to be more guys too, and it's not going to be as easy as just kind of just run and gun, just walk into a room, start opening fire, and be able to refill your ammo by the time you walk out of the room.
Okay. All right, so the review that Dave put up on The Last of Us is although the lack of direction gets frustrating, it has crystal clear graphics, fluid gameplay and combat, and a compelling story. It is a must play. So even though he kind of maybe nitpicked a little bit about the game from what I've seen and from what he's played, it's still a must play for The Last of Us. And just to give you a shout out, the guy I've been watching again is Vintage Beef. His YouTube channel is youtube.com/vintagebeef. I recommend his channel. He has some funny commentary during his gameplay, and he's also got a good variety of gameplay on his channel. So definitely check him out. And I thank him for his Let's Play. So I've been able to check out the game since I don't have a PS3, unfortunately, to experience the amazingness.
You gotta get on that.
I do, seriously. we have some industry news now. What's up? What's going on in the industry, Dave?
Break out the fanfare, the trumpets and the break out the band, because Microsoft finally got the fucking point this week. Everybody obviously heard of all the Xbox 180 jokes. Xbox completely did a reversal on their policies that were just ridiculous. After all the announcements from Sony about the DRM and the never online PS4. Xbox finally wised up and announced that they will no longer be requiring an internet connection, no longer be requiring a 24-hour check-in to play any offline games, and they will also have removed any DRM from their used games. So their used games will be working on the Xbox One the same way that used games work on the 360. So huge news from Xbox, because they realized probably because of the pre-order numbers. They say it was from their Xbox community, but I'm sure they probably got access to pre-order numbers and the information that they were, you know, getting fed from Sony, that they were getting their asses handed to them the past couple weeks on pre-orders. And I guess you would say fan news, and they wised up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, they say it's from the Xbox community, and they're listening to their customers and the consumers and stuff like. But let's you know, be honest about it. They got their ass handed to them by Sony, and you know, I think it was Sony really that forced their hand more than anybody in their so-called Xbox community. You know, and I think it's also the pre-order numbers, like you mentioned. And let's be honest, companies are in it to make money, and if they know they're losing money from a certain policy that they have, they're going to change it. And you know, that's what it's all about, is making money. But I think the interesting part of it is, and it's one of the things I actually thought Microsoft was almost kind of doing something, you know, good with, you know, with what they were trying to do. I think there was kind of a different thing that they were trying to do with it than what they actually put out there and what everybody got so angry about. And so I think that they're trying to move it to digital distribution, which I kind of agree with, you know, especially if it can lower the price on the game, since we're not having to pay for shipping and handling and, other, and the delivery and all that stuff and all the things that go on with actually getting a physical copy. I think there was some, forward thinking on that from Microsoft's part. They just put it out the wrong way and they were going about it the wrong way. So I think that that's the one thing that I think they were, kind of doing right with what they want to do. Because to me, I'd much rather have a digital copy than, having to go to the store. And, I want to be able to download day one, releases and such, which they're still going to do. Both of them are going to be doing that. But I think they just went about it the wrong way of trying to integrate that and introduce that to be a more, frequent use than actually having to go to a store and buy a game. But the one thing that they did trade off with the thing is that Microsoft had a family plan kind of built into it that you could access stored games since everything had to be downloaded to your hard drive on the device, that anybody in your family, up to 10 people in your family, could play it on that device. But that's no longer going to – they had to take away that capability when they changed this in their architecture and their software of the device. So they took away that, and also to be able to play a game that's downloaded to your system and logging into as you on a friend's device and be able to play. So they kind of – it's a trade-off, but I think, it's a trade-off they're willing to lose in order to, satisfy people and hopefully getting people back to pre-ordering or purchasing their system when it comes out. So, it's a trade-off, and I think they just went about it the wrong way, and they put too much restriction on what the idea that they're trying to get out there for digital distribution.
Yeah, and I think the big takeaway is that these shouldn't have been the policies in the first place.
Right.
And so you shouldn't have to make a reversal because your competitor had better policies and it resulted in better pre-order numbers and better reception from the community. And so you have to change your tune. Someone in your think tank should have realized that these were stupid ideas to begin with.
Right.
And you shouldn't have had that problem in the first place.
Right. I mean, I think what the official statement was is that you're still going to have to download the game to the hard drive. And I think there's going to be an internet check the first time you play the game.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that it's not a pirated copy or anything like that. But after that, you can play it offline as much as you'd like if it's a single player game. So, we'll see how that goes. We'll see if, as we go a couple years down the line, if both of these companies stay with what they're at. But because I think eventually they're going to get so much pressure from the third parties that they're going to have to do something DRM wise. I don't think this is going to last forever. I think at some point we're going to all be digital distribution when no one's going to be able to trade and sell used games or anything like that. So we'll see how that goes down the line. But who knows,
Right.
But who knows if they stick to their guns by this, forever, which I doubt it, but we'll see.
Right. Which they could certainly change their mind on that, because now they've changed their mind on this, so they've proven that they can flip-flop on things, and
right.
they're changing their minds like politicians over here. I mean, it's interesting because I've been seeing some tweets. It's like some people are like, oh, now Microsoft's changing their tune and they're flip-flopping like politicians. It makes them seem weak, and it's like, does it make them seem weak, or does it make them just more in tune? They're not politicians. They're not trying to stay firm on an issue. They're a customer driven industry, right, that knows what's going to sell to their customers. Now they're getting it right. They're going to sell more,
right,
more units. Like, yeah, it's flip floppy, but is it really is something as bad as, like, does it make them look weak? I don't know. I'm kind of,
no, it's all about making money. Yeah. Yeah, it's all about making money. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's a change in policy just to sell more devices that they thought they may not because of what's currently in place. And I know they don't want to lose market share to Sony, and I think at the current pace they were going to by a huge margin. So it's just all about making money at this point. I mean, we talked about it a lot, but I really never gave a shit about any of these policies because I don't really both of them didn't really affect me. I play used games and I trade my games in, but I don't ever loan them to a friend, and my system's always connected to the internet regardless of, of anything. So it didn't really affect me, but I know it affected a lot of people, especially in certain areas where they don't have, a reliable broadband internet and such like that. And a lot of people do lend their games to friends and things like that. But, it doesn't change my mind. I'm still getting a PS4. I'm moving on with the Xbox and such.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think that a lot of people that it's going to affect, the people that are going to be cheering, there's going to be the whole region lock thing with people that travel and to want to take their Xbox One and play video games. That, they Xbox support on Twitter made that stupid comment about, oh yeah, the region lock is going to be in place, and you can't play your Xbox One outside of the country that you've registered it in. Why don't you just take your Xbox 360? What's that?
It was even the zip code.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If you take it outside of your zip code. So if you're traveling, why don't you just take your Xbox 360 as an offline model?
Yeah. And I never knew how huge that was, actually, people traveling with their Xbox.
Yeah.
Until all this happened. I didn't realize there were so many people that go take it to, like, when they're on a business trip, or they take it to a hotel or something like that. I never knew how big that was. It's not something I ever thought about I would ever do. So I didn't realize that there was such a big, percentage of people that actually do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't realize that until that statement came out, and then things kind of exploded about it. And that was almost, I mean, that wasn't exactly the first domino, but it was something that happened, I guess, earlier this week, I think it was, if not late last week, that I saw that happen. And it was like things kind of started to fall into place after that for Xbox turning around on these policies. So,
yeah, well, they should have. I'm glad they did.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely the same as you. I'm going to stick with Sony from my next generation. I'm sticking with PS4. It's got more things that I want, more exclusives, less peripherals, and less integration with other things that I am not going to need. Maybe this makes me want, if somewhere down the line I'm able to have both systems at one time.
Right.
Maybe I will. Yeah. But yeah, it's not changing my mind on the first console I'm going to buy when I have the ability to buy one of the two.
Right.
I'm sticking with PS4 on that decision.
Yep, I agree with you, and I'm already on board for the PS4. I can't wait to get one, and such. I'm excited about it. Do you have any other news for us today?
No, that's pretty much it for the news. Just an addition on the PS4. If anybody hasn't checked it out yet, go on YouTube, check out their Sony's user interface video that they released this week. A lot of cool information on the sharing and the downloading of games and how it's all going to work with the DualShock 4. It looks really cool. It's all about staying connected, connected socially and playing games all at the same time. So check that out on YouTube. It's a pretty cool video.
Yeah, it was. It was a cool video to see the UI and stuff.
Yeah. other news in the industries, movie news, like we mentioned earlier, Robert Downey Jr. has officially been signed for not what we expected. He's been signed for the Avengers 2 and 3.
Wow.
But
yeah.
still no word on any new Iron Man movies. So I'm not sure what this really means. Does Iron Man end after Iron Man 3, and they're just going to do Avengers movies after this? And does that keep Joss Whedon? I mean, is that because?
Oh, I think it does. It has to.
Yeah. All right.
I think that was the deal breaker for him.
Yeah.
Because that's such an important character, the Avengers movies. And such, but I wouldn't be disappointed if they didn't make any more Iron Man movies. I think, three is about what you need. A trilogy is good for films and things like that. So I don't think you need any more Iron Man movies. I wouldn't be disappointed if there aren't any more, because I enjoyed all three of them that were made. And, I'm looking forward to definitely Avengers 2 and 3 now that he's still on board. I don't think you could make those films without him and recasting Iron Man. So I think that's great. I think it's a great move that they signed him. I'm sure Robert Downey Jr. got a shitload of money.
I'm sure he did. It's worth it, though.
Yeah, well deserved, because he made Disney and Marvel a shit ton with you know, bringing Tony Stark to life, you know. So
yeah, and I think that's how they're going to be able to play it off if they don't make any more Iron Man movies, because in Iron Man 3 they make a statement at the end that, you know, Tony Stark will be back, or he will return, or right. something like that. And maybe that's how they're just play it off now. Oh, we meant in the Avengers, and they just won't make any more Iron Man movies, which, you know, I'm sure no one has a problem with that. They didn't leave 3 open. I mean, for anyone that hasn't seen it, it's not really a spoiler. They didn't leave 3 open for any sort of cliffhanger for right. anything like another sequel to it. So right. I'm sure no one's going to have a problem if they don't make another Iron Man movie.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be, you know, upset if they didn't. I think it kind of fits, you know, especially with the end of 3 and such. It kind of fits about, you know, the Tony Stark character and Iron Man and such. So I wouldn't be disappointed if they don't. But I'm glad he's on for 2 and 3, because I really liked Avengers. I think that movie was it was one of the more enjoyable, you know, ensemble superhero movies. I mean, I don't know if there's been other ones like that, but I think it was really enjoyable. I think it was really, really well done, and it, you know, all the characters fit with each other, so it was really well done. So that's it for the news today. This week we go into the movie releases. There's 3 movies that come out today. Actually, there was 2, but one got pushed back because of Man of Steel last week that I didn't know about at the time, but it did get pushed back. But coming out today, we have the Brad Pitt sci-fi drama World War Z, which I guess is based on the novel, but everything that I've heard, that it's not like the novel at all. It's just kind of just taking the name World War Z.
So, yeah, so we'll see. That's what I've heard too.
Yeah, so everybody I've seen, you know, that's seen the trailer and who has read the book says it's really not what World War Z is, but we shall see. It's getting right now, it's 69% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think I'm going to go see it this weekend. I'm not sure, but I think I'm going to see it, so I might have a review on that over the weekend. Also coming out this week is Monsters University. It's the animated prequel to Monsters, Inc. from Disney and Pixar.
Awesome.
Yep, comes back with Billy Crystal and John Goodman as the starring roles. That's 82% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. I don't know. Monsters, Inc. was one of those films for me, like, it wasn't – it's a Pixar movie. I liked it, but it wasn't one of my favorite ones that they did. You know, maybe I don't know. Maybe because I have a problem with Billy Crystal, but, you know. I don't know if that's it, but I don't know. It was a good movie. I enjoyed it, but, you know, when I watch it now, you know, because my son likes the Pixar movies, and I watch Monsters, Inc. with them, and it's just like, wow, you know, it kind of doesn't almost hold up for me. It's not as entertaining when you watch it a couple times.
Yeah, he can be a little, that voice can be a little overbearing.
Yeah.
But, I'm surprised it's getting a lot of good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, because a lot of people have been saying it's going to be hard for them to replace the element that the character of Boo that brought to the first movie that kind of made the first film. So,
right.
But it'll be interesting. I'm kind of excited for it. I like the first one, so I'll probably end up seeing this one at some point here.
Yep. And the other movie that comes out this week that got pushed back from last week, I'm sure because of Man of Steel, and I'm sure they're not happy they pushed it back to go against World War Z and Monsters University, but it's The Bling Ring, and that's the one with Emma Watson. It's still at 63% on Rotten Tomatoes. That hasn't changed since all the reviews came out last week. So it'll be an interesting weekend. It'll be interesting to see if the whole zombie craze, you know, continues to dominate and beats Monsters University. But, you know, usually those animated films brings out all the kids and such, and the parents, you know, get an hour or two to have their kids shut up and just watch a movie for a little bit and get a little bit of a break. So I'm sure that'll probably be, you know, beat World War Z in the box office. If it beats Man of Steel, people are still going to see that. So that's it for movie releases this week. Video games wise, there's just 2 notables that comes out. Company of Heroes and comes out on PC on June 25th, and then Deadpool, the Marvel character Deadpool, has a game coming out on all everything, the 360, PS3, and PC. That comes out on the 25th as well. And it's really light. We're in that summer drought for video games right now. We kind of have to wait until Saints Row and then GTA get here before we actually start to pick up again. But, you know, we're in that bit of a drought right now with video games. So I don't know how many more video game releases we're going to mention until mid-August.
Yeah, until we get to, unless you're sports fans, you don't get much in the summer with, you get the football games in the summer, but, you don't usually get much until early fall. So, get The Last of Us and play that for a while.
Or have a backlog of games like I'm playing with Assassin's Creed and Mirror's Edge. So, you know, there is the NCAA 14 demo came out. EA put that out yesterday. So, you know,
if you want
to play some new football games, the demo's out there at least. But that's it for us right now for this podcast. The only other thing that we want to get to, and we both want to talk about this a little bit, and that's the passing of James Gandolfini. Both of us are huge fans of his and his character Tony Soprano, which he made famous, you know, for 8 seasons on HBO. I'm also a big fan of his, of the parts that he did play in some of the movies that he was a part of. And I know we're both huge fans of his. To me, it almost felt like Tony, he wasn't playing a character with Tony Soprano. It was him, you know, that came through his Jersey attitude, his Jersey, you know, kind of how he grew up in New Jersey and things like that. It was kind of just him. And I think that almost makes him and that character better than anybody else could have done, because maybe he had, you know, he maybe experienced some of that in his life or came across that while he was growing up in New Jersey. But, you know, he was just a tremendous actor. And, you know, one of the last thing I saw him in recently was Killing Them Softly, with that movie with Brad Pitt that I didn't really like the film as a whole, but Pitt and especially Gandolfini in the two long scenes that he had in that film was absolutely brilliant. And it's one of the more brilliant performances I've seen him play other than Tony Soprano. And he just, you know, he also seemed like a lot of the news reports that I was talking about, that he wasn't one of these actors that was just all about acting. That's not who he was. He was also, you know, he was more about, you know, his family and things like that. So, you know, he seemed like he was a genuinely good guy outside of acting and things like that. So it's really sad to see him go, and I'm disappointed. You know, even though he wasn't one of those that took on starring roles in a lot of films, he kind of almost stuck to indie films and kind of had bigger roles in indie films than he had in major releases like Zero Dark Thirty, Killing Them Softly, and Pelham 123 was the other one that another big movie that he had kind of a supporting role in. So he kind of stuck to, the supporting roles in big films, but also had larger roles in indie films as well. So it's sad to see him go. And I think we've missed out on someone that could have provided more entertainment for us acting wise in the future.
Yeah. Like you were saying, it was just watching him act. It was just, it almost seemed so effortless for him. And right. It was such a joy to watch pretty much anything he was in, especially The Sopranos. And just, Even like you were saying, the movies that, you know, you might not like the movie as a whole, it was still enjoyable to watch him in the parts that he was in, Killing Them Softly, even, you know, something like the Mexican, you know, he didn't have a huge part until later in Zero Dark Thirty, but even those few scenes there, they were great. It really is a sad loss for Hollywood and for everybody that, you know, that we lost a great actor, and it sucks. It sucks. We're not going to be able to get to see more from him. It looked like I checked out IMDb. Like, he had some things upcoming that were in kind of post-production. Maybe he even had a TV show that a pilot was airing, and, so, you know, it sucks that we're not going to be able to get to see more from him. And, you know, it's It's a terrible loss.
Absolutely. It sucks. And some of the reaction that came through on Twitter that I was reading, like one of them came from Steve Carell on Twitter. He just wrote, James Gandolfini, unbelievably sad news, a fine man. I think one of the post by Damon Lindelof, who was one of the creators of Lost, he wrote, I think it's kind of beautifully written in a way. It just says, James Gandolfini, you created an icon and you cut to black way too abruptly. Thank you and rest in peace, was one of them. Rob Lowe wrote on Twitter, James Gandolfini gave the greatest performance in the history of television. He was also a kind man. Condolences to his family. I know I saw a quote from Brad Pitt, who he was in a couple films with, including most recently Killing Them Softly, that he is gutted by the loss of Gandolfini. All the people that he worked with understood who, you know, he was, not as an actor, even as just a person, that, you know, that they got to know him and such. Because, like I said, the couple of the interviews I saw with people that had interviewed him, and I know there's a coincidentally in this month's GQ that's coming out next week, they did a story on how playing Tony Soprano might have had an effect on him, you know, personally. Yeah. So that's coming out, and they had an interview with him on the news, an interview with the writer that wrote the piece and interviewed Gandolfini, and just said that he was trying to talk to him about this, and Gandolfini was just kind of very reserved about it. He wasn't interested in talking about, you know, his role and stuff like that. It was in the past for him and such kind of, and so that was it was interesting to see that, you know, usually these actors that get out there who are popular in popular roles, that's kind of, you know, what they live for is the people to talk about their performances in television and movies, even though maybe that's behind them at this point, that they still live for that. And it's nice to see that he was a very humble person that, you know, didn't, you know, wasn't throwing that in everybody's face or anything like that, that a lot of actors, you know, modern day actors seem to be doing that lately. So it's nice to see that a guy that can do a brilliant work as an actor is also very humble outside of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's it for us this week. We appreciate you guys checking us out again. We'll be back next week with another episode of the podcast. Like I said, I might go see World War Z this weekend and check that out and have a review for you. Otherwise, we'll certainly have some things up on the site this week to check out and such. You know, if you guys ever have anything you want us to check out or review, you can always hit us up through the site. You can contact us at contact@twodudesreviews.com. Hit us up on Twitter. Our personal Twitter accounts are on the site, so you can check us out as there as well. We talk a lot about different things, sports, you know, a lot of different things, not just what we review. So you can check us out there as well. So, until next week, we appreciate you guys checking us out. And as we leave tonight, instead of our outro music, we're now going to leave you with a clip of Gandolfini as one of the more memorable spots that he had as Tony Soprano earlier in the series out this week. So we appreciate you guys checking us out. And until next week, cheers. We'll talk soon.
Salute, everybody.
Tell you something. Nowadays, everybody's got to go to shrinks and counselors and go on Sally, Jesse, Raphael and talk about their problems. Whatever happened to Gary Cooper, the strong, silent type? That was an American. He wasn't in touch with his feelings. He just did what he had to do. See, what they didn't know was once they got Gary Cooper in touch with his feelings, that they wouldn't be able to shut him up. And then it's dysfunction this, and dysfunction that, and dysfunction my fungal. Let me tell you something. I had a semester and a half of college, so I understand Freud. I understand therapy as a concept. But in my world, it does not go down. Could I be happier? Yeah. Yeah. Who couldn't?